might survive.
Okay, it is 2:35 p.m. on Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchek. This is a work session on the Otter Tail Power rate case settlement proposal, and the case number is PU-17-398. I don't have any opening comments. Do you, Commissioner Fedorchek?
I do not.
So I'll turn it over to the portfolio holder, Commissioner Krasius.
Okay, thank you. Well, just to give a quick overview, this started on November 2nd, 2017, when Otter Tail filed for a rate increase. January 11th, we had two interveners that entered Walmart Stores Incorporated and then Midwest Large Energy Consumers Group. On February 27th, or actually between that time, we took into account the TCJA, and then on February 27th, the interim rates were decreased as a result of that. And then we had a hearing on July 11th, and now we're looking at a potential settlement. And to dive into the settlement itself, I had a conversation, I believe it was last week, with staff, and the revenue number that's being requested isn't really at issue or an issue with me, but on table 3 of the settlement, the proposed customer charges, what I'd like to talk about is residential, and it's on page 8 of 17 on the settlement. Let everyone get there.
Yep.
Okay. Residential is currently at $8, the monthly customer charge, and the proposed amount on residential is to move that to $15.23. And the quick math on that is it would be right around an $87 a year increase for residential. And then you can see the other rate classes as you go down. Large general service is increasing, but here's the question I have. It just seems like a really big jump on the residential side, and I realize that this is a rebalancing to get closer to the actual cost of service study. I think during the hearing itself, if I remember right, I asked how close does this bring things, and for whatever reason, the 80% of the way there is the number that sticks in my mind. And I don't think it was. I think it was an estimate. You know, maybe it was 80 to 85%. But the question is, for me, and just throwing a number out, moving residential instead from 8 to 12 instead of the 15-23, how then, if the revenue number overall is acceptable, where does that difference, where is that made up? Is it made up on energy charge? Is it a combination of moving the monthly service charges for other customer classes? Maybe not all of them, but some of them outside of residential. And I just wanted to get a better handle on where others are at. It's a big jump, you know, the $7.23 a month on the residential side. And I don't know if we were going through the rate design. Is there any relief, Jerry, on the energy charge portion that will offset a portion of that?
So if you don't raise the customer charge as much as proposed, You just put that money into the energy charge, and it stays with that class. Of course, you could question how it's split up between the classes, too, and say that we're going to give the industrial some. Settlement doesn't call for them to get anything, or if they did, it was really a little, tiny little bit. But you'd have to go away from the settlement agreement to do that, and then the parties would have the option to say we don't want to support the settlement agreement anymore. They did say the customer charge that they would go to 14.
Right.
So, and they volunteered that, and so
they being Otter Tail.
Yeah, and I don't think that anybody would leave the settlement for the 14. Otter Tail said they wouldn't. I was able to kind of find a backdoor approach to what the class cost of service study number probably is, and I came up with $19.05 for the residential customer class. But now keep in mind that that would be using their class cost of service study, and that would differ from what the intervener staff's consultant found for it, and I don't have that number.
And where did you get your 19? Which back door did you use out of the evidence?
The intervener staff's consultant said that the $8 was 42% of the customer, of the class cost of service customer survey. And so I was able to divide 8 by 0.42 and come up with 1905 as being that number. The study itself didn't spit that number out. You normally expect to find that, but in Otter Tail's case, they had used a marginal class cost of service study to set their customer charges. And so the embedded class cost of service study doesn't have them totaled up to where you can just point at it and say this is it. The embedded or the marginal class cost of service study took a lot of criticism from the staff consultants, and I don't know really if it's how much problems it's got, but I think it's like your other embedded class cost of service study, is that it depends on who does it and what assumptions they've made and what ways that they allocate stuff and things like that. The marginal class, if I remember right, was 17 and a quarter. Yeah. That's for residential. We also took a look at what MDU and NSP are charging, and for them it's about $14 a month on their residential customer charge.
Is that what it is? I was wondering that.
Yeah. So it's like one of them had $13.99 and the other one had $14, I think it was. But so the $14 at Otter Tail has volunteered is right in line with what everybody else is paying.
But that doesn't imply that the MDU and NSP costs are the same as Otter right. Tails. I mean,
which is true, but still, there's some bearing, I think, in having them similar between the utilities.
Right, MDU was $13.99, and NSP was $14.50.
And the same with the small commercial charges. MDU and Otter Tail were similar. I mean, MDU, Otter Tail, and NSP are all similar with the charge that they're saying now. I think it was like 25.
Small general?
Yeah, $24.90. So that's most of your customers are in the small general or residential class. The bigger stuff is bigger bills. To where the customer charge doesn't matter as much to them.
The proposed numbers are, that's the assumption that energy charges do not change.
I don't recall if the energy charges were going to go up or down with this raise in the customer charges, but I think you don't know for sure until the numbers actually get run and you end up with they'll file compliance tariffs afterwards.
But under, so if energy charges dropped a little bit or whatever amount, but if they went down, even though a large general service customer is paying more on their monthly charge, a high volume user, it's conceivable they would actually pay less, correct?
If the high-volume user loses some of its energy payments that it has to make, it could see a decrease in its bill regardless what they did with the customer charge. Those would be high load factors where they're running like 24/7 or something like that, and so they use a lot of energy. And then they also would have a demand charge.
I missed the transition here. I thought we were talking about the residential customer charge and whether it should be 15.23 or what was it that the company said they would do to 14 or some other number. And I always presumed that if that were lowered, that then the residential energy charge would be increased to raise the same amount of money. And now all of a sudden we're in the other customer categories, and I missed that transition. Are we talking about changing
the
customer charges for others too?
Well, the customer charges were all going up.
Well, from what was proposed here.
Not necessarily. It could be. If nothing else was changed in terms of proposed monthly charges between the various classes, if nothing else changed, and residential dropped from 8 to 14 or 8 from, I had thrown out 12, the difference, if we agree to the overall revenue number, would have to come through the energy charge.
To residential, unless we specified something else.
Unless, well.
But I mean, I presume that was their intention when they said they would agree with the 15.23 to 14, because I never heard that that was a shift between classes. So no, I'm assuming that was the intention there.
Yeah, because then the energy charges just fall out of whatever you set the customer charge at and what the revenue requirement for the class is.
I think when Jerry got talking about the other classes, he was just pointing out what their changes were, and this one small general, which he said has a lot of customers, between that and residential, you have most of your customers, is a similar type of an increase, you know, not quite double.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are there, they currently have an energy charge, right? They have a volumetric charge still?
Yeah.
Okay.
Per
kilowatt hour. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm getting this mixed up with the gas. Never mind.
Anything else on that customer service charge?
But it's probably a small percentage of their bill.
Yeah.
Well, not even probably it. If they're a large general to begin with, it's going to be a small percentage of their bill.
Tell me on the general service time of use that goes from 16 to, and then the large general service secondary, from 16 to 219 or 40 to 215. What's the rationale for that?
You know, I don't really know. They would have more expensive metering.
So these are new? Wait, are these the new ones? General service? So.
No, the customer charge below, before for the time of use, general service was $16.
Okay, so what kind of customer is that? What kind of a rate is that, this time of use? Tell me how that works.
You pay different rates for on-peak and off-peak usage.
Okay.
So you need a meter that knows whether you're on-peak or off-peak to...
And why is that different? I mean, that meter isn't different today than it was before, so why do they all of a sudden need to go from $16 to $219?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose we could go back and dig in the testimony and see if we could find something, but I don't recall.
That's either there's something logical, some logical explanation of that, or we better know what it is, because I would assume those customers would be like, what had just happened?
Yeah, I would guess the 16 was probably a bit low.
Jerry always making bold statements.
It's, but if I'm remembering right, the large industrials were like Bobcat and some of those.
But that's these guys.
The large general service.
But they're going up too.
Yeah, oh yeah. And they didn't mind. I mean, they signed the settlement.
Right.
Well, can we get to the... That would be one thing that I'd just like clarification on. What's the rationale for that?
I'll see what I can find out for
so
you guys.
The general service time of use, large general service secondary, large general service time of day, and then municipal pumping. They're, I mean, controlled service, those two are getting jacked up, too.
Your municipal pumping went up to $26.50 from $4.
Yeah, and then controlled service went to $20 from $4 and $5.
Yeah, and everything is cranked pretty much on the customer charge.
Okay. irrigation ones. We talked about the irrigation in the... And Randy, you asked a question about that irrigation in the hearing, didn't you?
I asked something
what
to
was
that
it
effect.
You, Brian?
I think I had made note that just the current ag economy. But at the same time, to expect that you're going to have power brought into an irrigation unit for
a dollar
on the monthly charge, I would expect that to be a little bit more than the average household charge.
Okay.
I mean, these numbers, when you look at some of them, I mean, how did, you know, how was a dollar arrived at? Unless, I guess I don't know. When was the last rate case? Was 2008?
Yeah.
So part of this is a product of 10 years have gone by.
And the one before that was like 10 years before that, too.
Yeah. And I guess I should clarify, I'm referring more toward, you know, the average cost of inflation over a 10-year period, if you just use the average inflationary factor slash number, what would the 8 look like?
What would the 8 look like with inflation?
I didn't do the math on it. I probably could have, but obviously over a 10-year period, it might look more like a $12, $13, $14 number. So from an inflationary standpoint, but it's always more difficult, I think, to convince customers that they've gotten a break, if that's the case, for a number of years when they see such a big jump on their monthly charge.
Yeah, we've...
It's a tough argument to make, but...
Over the years, you know, the customer charges were kind of set on a little bit, kept down. And the commission has kind of gotten away from that a little bit in the last few years.
So the advantage on the residential side from moving the number down from the 1523 low usage households would benefit to some degree. Higher usage households would experience more if it's being made up on the energy charge. But I don't know if it's a big number at the end of the day, because we're
raising the customer charge would.
That's direct.
Be of benefit to the larger user.
Right. Energy charge increases would benefit, in theory, proportionately the smaller usage customers.
Yeah, if you put more of it in a customer charge, then the guy that uses a lot of energy won't see as much increase.
That may be a very low income situation, living in a very tiny home, or it may be a very high income situation where it's just the lake home and they go out and start the fireplace once a month. I guess that's more of an argument on gas, but there's also electric situations like that.
We don't have a lot of lake homes in eastern North Dakota.
I don't.
It could be anything out there that's, you know, a
hunting shack.
Toys, you know, where you want some electricity on occasion.
Right.
So, I guess I don't see a correlation too much between income and usage. AARP thought they did in the MDU case from gas. But, you know, like in low income might have an old, isn't insulated well.
Electric heat?
Electric heat. And I guess Ottertail, I think, does have some electric heat.
Not to digress, but I remember moving from an 1,100 square foot home to a 2,300 square foot home, and my electric bill dropped. Because the first home was not sound, we'll say, from a
You have gas in that or, new house and didn't have it in the old house?
Yeah. Okay, well, anything else on the customer service charges? Here's what I'm struggling on, because whether it's I've struggled even with the proper terminology for these. The original request sought $15.7 million. I don't know if the proper term is gross increase, and a $13.1 million net increase, and the difference being whether you factored in the reduction in the riders. And then, but so playing off the 15.7, my understanding is, as we would get to the bottom of this settlement, the correlating number, well, before the $200,000 decrease, would be 5.6 million. No, 7.36 million. And then the net would be 5.6. But there's a difference in between those two in how much difference there is there. And that's I'm lost on what that is.
There's also thrown in there is the Tax Act.
But whether you go net or without factoring in the riders, the tax impact should be the same, shouldn't it?
I think that when you brought out the 15 down to 13, the taxes were higher.
It also included adjustments to the TCRR, RRAR, and the ECRR.
Which I think was to bring them out. There was some confusion in the testimony about what adjustments.
Well, then let me try and ask it a different way.
It's the one page that outlines it all. And it is confusing. I just kind of focus in on the bottom line.
Okay, let's take the bottom line then. $5.4 million.
Yep. That's even after, I think, the $200,000. But I don't
know. That is. That's my understanding, at least. That's a net annual revenue increase of $5.4 million, which would be, 7.7 million less than the original net annual revenue increase of 13.1. But previously on that page, it mentions the $7.364 million in base revenue increase, which is almost $8 million less than the 15.7. I just can't seem to get the nets and the total to match in how much they've been reduced. And I know a big part of the reduction was the tax cuts and some other things, but it seems like it should be the same on each side of the equation, whether we're talking net or total.
I struggled with page 4 as well.
What are you
trying to get to the bottom of it.
Page 4 of the proposed order?
Yes.
But are you factoring in the rider revisions?
Well, on one side of the equation would be without them, and one side would be with them.
So you got, and but then I finally decided, does I'm not sure it matters.
Maybe it doesn't.
You get to the bottom, like, number.
So it said that the TCGA was $6 million.
Yep. Well, no, the TCGA was less than $6 million.
Reduced.
TCGA and other adjustments were $6 million.
TCGA is 4.8, I believe. Okay,
gotcha.
Well, so it goes from 7.5 million in net increase, which is after the TCJA. Then the settlement proposed to 7.3. Then you consider in the riders, that's 5.6. And then they made some additional adjustments. In the settlement, then the final number is 5.4.
Net increase,
which includes digit, that's all in, all included, everything the customers are paying, right?
That's my understanding.
That's my understanding too.
But on the side of the equation where you factor in the riders, the net increase from their original ask till the end, it's like 7.7 million. And if you don't factor in the riders, it's an 8.5 million reduction. And I can't get my arms around that, where that other $800,000 is.
Ask me about a little work. I can't answer you today. Pat, can you?
No, I'm not able to answer that either.
We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Okay,
then I'm going to jump to a different subject. On page 5 of this proposed order, I don't recall us doing these kinds of things before. It doesn't seem appropriate to me to have these things in here that we don't dispute the record of superior utility performance and that paragraph.
Don't take this order as anything we would end up writing in the end once you tell us what you're doing.
Okay.
Just the facts.
Yeah.
Like just the numbers and that sort of stuff.
Maybe fewer of the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is something you can kind of go by to look at tables and things, but
okay.
There's a lot more, especially with the settlement, way too much in this order.
Okay, and then something that I wanted to really get into in a hearing, but since there was a settlement, we didn't get to. And so I don't know if this is the proper place or not. I've had concerns in the past, and my understanding is Otter Tail's PTCs are kind of coming to an end of existing ones. I'm really concerned about what I think has been the precedent all along, where you build a wind farm and then you account for those costs over 25 or 30 years over the life of it, but you take all your PTCs up front. So those initial customers are getting a much better deal than the later customers. And with potential future wind farms being added, does this settlement lock us into a procedure, or is how to account for the PTCs something that would be dealt with when they bring one on board?
Well, I would say generally this settlement does not bind you to anything related to that question.
Okay, I mean, so when they would bring a new facility on board, we would deal with that then?
Yes. Put it in, because remember to do a little sticky list.
The riders would still exist. We're not wiping them out. They're just going to be empty.
Right.
You know, and I don't really know how they're levelizing their production tax credits. If they're taking them all as they're occurred, or if somehow or other they're levelized them out and there's deferred taxes and stuff.
Well, we do know that. I mean, we've told them how that goes.
And
maybe don't remember, but that we know that, don't we?
We've talked about it before.
In each individual time you approve the rider, you'd be having, be approving whatever their method is, but I don't know.
And, you know, Mike used to follow that and was wanting to use the riders rather than base rates for the advantages in the pricing passing on to the consumers as they're realized. So.
Well,
I'm fine with dealing it as they come, if as long as we're not locking ourselves into something.
I don't think so. And we can say that. We can emphasize it in the order.
So everything goes out of the renewable rider into base rates. And how they use the production. Oh, here. Randy, I'm not sure if this answers your question or not, but page 9 of 17 of the settlement agreement talks about the production tax credits accumulated deferred income taxes. I mean, that's on the existing ones and future ones we would...
I think my opinion had more clarity than what this provides. I don't know exactly what this is saying.
Well, it's talking about the production tax credits, but it's also as it relates to the accumulated deferred income tax. And I don't know if that's the total production tax credit or if there's something additional. I don't know enough about it.
Isn't that the ones they can't use because they don't apply? So they generate all these production tax credits in a year, and they can't use all of them. So this tells us how they're dealing with all of those accumulated production tax credits.
I have no idea.
Well, if our ultimate order locks us in to something whereby the production tax credits that are received are used up over a different time period than what we're dividing the expenses for building it out, then I would have a problem with that. I want to discuss it more then. But if this doesn't address that, then we don't need to discuss it now. It can be another time.
We talked about that in the hearing, and what the staff, my recollection, although I can't spit it out in technical terms, my recollection is staff wanted the production tax credits to be matched as closely as possible to the current customers or benefiting them, and that's how it's being done. But
I remember an issue with Otter Tail that they couldn't use all their tax
right
credits, and so it was getting deferred, and so I don't know anymore.
No, they're being reflected in rates immediately, and then they're put over into this account for, I don't know, because I'm not an accountant, but then now this settlement addresses how. So the customers are benefiting immediately from the tax credits that are generated. It's just that the company can't use them right away, so they're putting them over for tracking purposes in another tax account.
And then they get a return.
On that.
Yeah.
I think that the both sides here are listening, and I think that they should get together and write an explanation of this paragraph as it relates to Commissioner Christman's concern.
As of the date of our...
And file it, and it'll be sitting in the docket, and then we can understand it. I have some thoughts, but I'm not qualified to even voice them.
I like that. And the other thing that I want to bring up, and we already talked about it in a previous work session, is toward the end, again, the same way, with all this time building up to an end, but a lot of things seeming, I don't know, somewhat clear. I'm not hearing a lot of lot of argument about the amount of additional revenues that are necessary. I would think the company is working on a refund plan as we speak, and that it's a matter of plugging in the dollar amount at the end and the correct date, and that this should not take 90 days to do that, and that it can be done much more quickly.
Yeah, and we had some discussions, and there were, like, you have to prorate bills and stuff like that. And so you need at least a billing cycle, which is a month, and then another 45 days or so to get the prorating right on them.
We'll ask Otter Tail how their billing system works, and we'll try to get the shortest time from Otter Tail, just like from MDU.
Not the shortest time convenient, the shortest time possible.
Yeah.
I'm out of subjects.
I don't have any. I think it's going in the right direction. I support the $14 change on the customer charge. I'd like some clarification on those significant increases on the other customer charges. And otherwise, and then if we can sort of make the calculations of the various changes to the requirements less muddy, that would be helpful to be able to track.
What was the last part of what you said?
Cleanup number, page 4 of the settlement agreement, of the order. We won't use that, but just so we can track how this
so you have followed. Numbers you understand that you can explain to other people if necessary.
Correct. What they asked for. And I'm not that interested in considering any numbers or trying to commit to memory any numbers that don't include the net, like impact to customers. I don't need to distinguish those, but maybe others want to. I just want to have everything, including the riders, because that's what customers end up paying. So
I think I'm going to ask the parties to file this and get waivers from the other parties to putting it in the record and get it, rather than staff, the three of us, trying to extrapolate it.
I don't know, it really doesn't have to do with
he's got it done already.
Approval or something of this settlement, but it's just an observation. Do the other electric companies have this many customer classes? It seems like this is really a lot.
No, they have quite a few. They also have a little bit more complicated system.
Who has the more complicated system?
Otter Tail. Their residential demand control rates and stuff like that, real-time pricing, things like that are things that the other utilities don't offer.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Not for me.
For me.
Okay.
Thanks, you guys.
We're done. Thank you, everyone.